The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Off we go into a new week. Thanks for being with us. Chairman of the board is Jared Nielsen. If anything goes wrong, it's totally his fault, not mine. Bobby Hurley is scheduled to jump on in with us here in a few minutes. He was just with me in his car zooming, and it wasn't good. So this has the potential to be, I don't know, could be a little bit off the rails today, which I like. John Wilner is going to be with us, Wilner Hotline, where all conversation today is really, really about, about the women's tournament. And also we will talk about U of A having their early exit, because John, through the years, has covered the Wildcats and just the fallout over the last few days. We'll have that with the great John Wilner as well. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always, that is Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their support. The Yankees are in town today. Very excited. The baseball team, the Hometown Nine, is off to a quick start. The Diamondbacks took 3 of 4 from Colorado. I went to opening night, watched over the weekend, trying to figure out this and the streaming deal that they have, the MLB. I got it all the way to, this will sound very old man-ish, this, and I'm not. I had this all the way to watching it on my phone. It was pretty easy. But I wanted to airplay it, and I'm sitting there over the weekend. I got as far, maybe some of you run into this. I got as far as with MLB.TV that the audio would come through, but the video would not. So I'm listening to the game. I'm able to watch it here, but it's not getting onto the screen. Are you following me on this? And then in this office, I have Cox, so I'm able just to watch the game. But I want to watch the game from wherever. It's just me. You have all these. I know I'm not alone on this. I've got Hulu. I've got Peacock. I've got YouTube TV. I have got Apple TV, Apple Plus. I have Netflix. I've got, let me think, who else am I missing here? I've got Paramount. I've got them all. Couldn't watch the games where I wanted to. And so I was a tad frustrated by that. It's just a me problem. On the basketball side of things, because primarily this weekend, it was basketball and golf for me. Golf, I'll get to in a bit. It was out here at the Seville Country Club. I was able to take in the LPGA with some big cigars and just some very nice people and enjoyed myself. But we'll get into the basketball side. So with U of A out, I don't have really a reason to follow that closely. I do in terms of watching, like I will watch and take it in for show stuff for this. And so I'm captivated by DJ Burns. When I see DJ Burns, and everybody's talking about DJ Burns at North Carolina State today, and who he reminds him of, and we're hearing a lot of Zach Randolph. No, I see Oliver Miller. Those of you from back in the day nodding your head in agreement, O could pass. O had a great sense of humor about him. Oh, Charles had the best line about Oliver. Brad, it's one time I had Charles on, Barkley. Brad, Oliver, oh, just needs to learn two words. I said, what are those two words, Charles? And he said, I'm full. It's very funny. And when I see DJ Burns and all of a sudden all the football guys go to the, well, let's just get him into playing football. Football's got to be much better for him. And think of all the stuff he could make and all the insiders in the NFL, like, oh my gosh. What one NFL general manager told me about DJ Burns playing in the NFL. Well, he's not, just so we're clear. And he's doing just fine. He's doing just fine. So here's North Carolina State. Like of the final four teams, and I'll talk to Bobby Hurley about this in a bit. Of the teams that are in the Final Four as it sits right now, I am looking at it and saying NC State is the most intriguing. UConn and Purdue feel like what the Final Four, the championship game will be. Alabama's the team that's just kind of sort of maybe there. There's really nothing that interesting about Alabama to me. If you're a Crimson Tide fan, it's your football team. You just lost your football coach, Greg Burns, the AD there. I like Greg. Consider Greg a friend. But I don't, there's not much there. North Carolina State, of course, has DJ Horn, who played for Bobby over at Arizona State. Here's a kid now that's getting the opportunity to do his thing. So I can find the storylines all day long on the Final Four now that's coming to the Valley. By Wednesday, we will be in Final Four mode. There's so many events. There's an event today on security. There's an event tomorrow on we were at the floor last week. There's events all week. It's a coaching convention. Literally, I know that when I get Bobby on here in a few minutes, we're going to talk about the coaches that he's going to see and all that. So it's great. Of the events that we have, the big sporting events, give me the Final Four all day, any day, over anything else. Over anything else through the years that I've covered. Doesn't matter if it's the NBA Championship Series, a Super Bowl, a World Series. The Final Four is the best of the best of the best. Me as a basketball kid, when I would walk through an exhibit hall and I'd have this coach to the right and this coach to the left, and I'd set up my stuff and I'd have them sit down with me. I can go all the way back to really old school times where it's John Thompson and Jerry Tarkanian and Jim Herrick, and we're just chopping it up. You know, it's just, it's Jim Boeheim that's saying one thing on one side of the street, and on the other side you have another, you know, it's Tom Izzo. So the fun of the Final Four is diving into the coaches. The men's game is not as good as the women's game right now. I just don't see any way you could debate that. Unless you have a dog in the fight, unless you have a kid in the game or team that's in the game, the women today, tonight, at 4 o'clock this afternoon, I will be sitting and watching LSU against Iowa. Kim Mulkey is Bobby Knight. That's who she is. Angel Reese against Caitlin Clark. And then I'll probably watch UConn against USC on one side with the Yankees and the Diamondbacks on the other. Paige Buchers and Juju Watkins, like, the girls' game is set up for long-term success. On the men's side of things, not so much. It's been a struggle to keep the big names in school. And so when you look at the way that it's put together, the women's game has stars, the men's game does not. Now, how is it? What's one of the big storylines from the weekend? One of the big storylines of the weekend is how Portland in the women's game, they couldn't figure out how to measure the three-point stripe correctly. One side of the court was off from the other. I talked to people who said, yeah, when I watched the game, it looked strange, it looked weird, it looked bizarre. The Washington Post actually offered to go out with a measuring tape and measure it, and the NCAA wouldn't let them. It's just so NCAA. We got this all figured out. Yeah, kind of like announcing ASU's penalties in football. You've got it all figured out. You don't. And so when you look at all of this and say the women's game is on equal footing than the men, no, it's not. It's not even close. How does that happen? I mean, seriously, how does that? Could you imagine today if on the men's side, the court wasn't measured correctly? And me, having daughters and coach girls basketball and done the Mercury games when they first started and seeing the inequities in sports and how the ladies have always been given second fiddle, third fiddle, fourth fiddle, it's just not as big a deal to some as the men's side is. On a betting end of things, yeah, if you don't have daughters, you don't get it. You just don't get it. And you won't get it. You'll choose not to get it. You'll want me talking about backup linebackers taking the sixth round of the NFL draft rather than college basketball day. It's not happening. Wrong show. So how that still happens in this day and age, I have no clue. That's just not acceptable. And what do you do? And the coaches aren't going to say, yeah, we're not going to play this game. We're not going to play. We choose to not play this game. Like, how's that work exactly? All right, we'll take a break here. We have John Wilner, Bobby Hurley scheduled to join us. We're back with more after this timeout. The great John Wilner, nice enough, on Mondays to drop on in for a couple of minutes. Always good to chop it up with John. Wilner Hotline, you can find him on social media. Of course, his content is on not just our website, but across the country as well, as he does great work on a syndicated basis, primarily in the West. I should be clear about that. Have you ever dealt with Kim Mulkey? Let's just start with the buzz of tonight of women's basketball. We'll get to the flame out, the annual flame out, I must say, of U of A. We'll get to the Final Four being set here in the Valley. But everybody today, John, is talking about tonight of the Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese of Iowa against LSU. Nobody's talking about South Carolina, even though they're the prohibitive favorite to win the whole thing, which I think is interesting. They're talking about Juju Watkins. They're talking about Paige Buchers, USC, Connecticut. Have you ever dealt with Kim Mulkey at all?
I have not, no. She seems to be an interesting character, frame it that way. It could not have worked out better for women's basketball, though, having this matchup tonight. I mean, it's like marketing out of the NFL, right? The NFL is the premier marketer of its own brand and product. And it's almost like women's college basketball has taken a page from the NFL's handbook, because it worked out perfectly for this matchup tonight. The Washington Post article, not just this Washington Post article that has generated so much interest in Mulkey, but her being proactive 10 days ago and talking about it and generating headlines about an article that hadn't come out yet.
There wasn't, by the way, there wasn't a whole lot to that article that was eyebrow raising.
It
was like, what are you raising? The LA Times article that came out, that Ben Block wrote, and she crushed him in the LA Times, and then they went back and changed some things. I have yet to see an official apology yet from the LA Times, but now, major national outlets making this into a bigger deal than the men's game, even, in my opinion.
Yep. Yep. And so you get, it's like there's no such thing as bad publicity deal. All these articles about Mulkey, fair, unfair, Washington Post, LA Times, you know, ESPN is writing about the articles about Mulkey in these other publications. It's right. Generating tons of interest. And then you got the Reese Clark thing. Could not have worked out better. I don't, off the top of my head, know the record for women's, the TV ratings record for a women's basketball game, but they got a shot to bust it. And the ratings tonight for this game could certainly approach what we're going to see from the men's Final Four this coming weekend. It's perfect for women's basketball. Now, and the broader ratings uptick in the tournament for women's basketball, it's been terrific. The material impact that it's going to have, I'm not sure. It's hard to quantify because they just signed a new TV deal for the women's tournament. So it's not like they're in the middle of negotiations and this is going to help, but it still just generally helps the sport immensely.
Kim Mulkey reminds me a little bit of Bob Knight. Just a way of, here she is going to just say, I don't give a bleep about you. You're not going to talk about my players that way. I'm going to make it all about me. Thus, it's not all about these players. Thus, media is so distracted with me, my players, case of Knight, men, Mulkey, women, they can just go play because I'm going to say things. And I think there's some strategy with her in working over the media. Am I wrong on this?
No, you're not. And that's a great comparison to Knight. And the interesting piece is, you know, I've seen some stuff where, you know, some journalists have pose the question, you know, is Mulkey getting treated unfairly, getting singled out because she's a female coach in women's basketball? Whereas some of the stuff she does, plenty of men's coaches do those kind of things and have that kind of personality, and they're not put in the spotlight in the same way the Washington Post put Mulkey in the spotlight. Knight, obviously, different level, you know, on all fronts.
Sure.
One of a kind. But I think that that's fair to raise that issue. Is Mulkey getting treated differently because she's a female coach? She's a woman coaching women's basketball, whereas there's plenty of men who do the same thing on the men's side. I don't know. But it's all going into this big pot that's going to create massive ratings. And the Caitlin Clark, all the commercials and the NIL talk, and Reese is on the court trash talking, which is another thing. Men do plenty of trash talking, right? And there's a lot of focus on Reese trash talking. Men flop. Caitlin Clark flops. There's talk about Caitlin Clark flopping, right? Sure. But it's all adding up to just an absolute killer TV ratings.
Yeah, I find it interesting that South Carolina is nowhere in this conversation. And just watching the women's game so far, they, to me, seem to be the better team than anybody else.
Yeah, but Dawn Staley's probably thrilled. Nobody's talking about her team.
Nobody's talking about them. Right.
Perfect for her. It was certainly nice of the Pac-12 teams to lose, to set up this showdown for the sport to see. You know, I'm being sarcastic, but right. I mean, that's part of the reason that we're seeing Iowa against LSU is because Colorado and UCLA lost to those teams, right? This could have been a Pac-12 was close to getting 2-3 teams in the Final Four.
So when you heard the story about the lines not being set up correctly on the 3-point arc up in Portland for the women's tournament, were you surprised?
No, unfortunately I wasn't. And the funny thing is that at one point I flipped on one of the Portland games and there was something weird, but I couldn't figure out what it was. Yeah. But you know, you're watching the flow of play on both sides. And there was something that just spatially, I couldn't quite get what it was, but that was it. That was it. And it's interesting too, if you look at, say, Stanford's shooting percentages, it was much worse in the half when Stanford was shooting with the longer, the line that was incorrect. And same with NC State too. I mean, you can see one half you shoot much better at the closer line, and the half you're playing on the longer line, it's worse.
So we're going to hear something today about betting, aren't we? Aren't there going to be people that say I put money on that game and the court was fixed? I don't know if I think I'm going too far on this, John. It's just we all want to embrace the gambling aspect. Oh, it's so great. We're here. Okay. Well, now you have a situation where the court wasn't even put together right. This is one issue. The other issue goes back to the University of Oregon women a few years ago, pointing out that they had one set of benches and some box lunches in the corner, that the women's game still doesn't mean a rat's ass to people at the NCAA level, even though you have these high level players going about. It's like, it's the girls, who cares? There's some good old boy. That could never happen. Imagine today if that was out there on the men's side of the tournament, that they wasn't measured correctly. Instead, it's like, oh, well, you know, we're going to look into it. No, that's not how this should work.
No, it's terrible. And it's very similar to the issue with the resources given to the women's game a couple of years ago. I think that was the COVID season, so March of 2021. And it's important to point out too, with this Portland court fiasco, that the NCAA is responsible for the court. They outsourced the court fabrication, the design to a company, and the group in Portland that operates the regional has nothing to do at all with the court itself. That is completely on the NCAA, not on the Portland folks. And it's just bananas. It would never, ever happen in the men's game. Never.
Hey, are you done?
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No.
It also is bad publicity is good publicity type deal. It's adding to the interest and the storylines in the women's tournament. The court fiasco is, in some ways, it's good because it's just drawing more attention.
Yeah, the only bad publicity is when you're in the obituary column.
That is, you said it.
That is not good publicity.
That or if you lose to a 6 seed as a number 2 seed. Trying to give you a segue here.
John just laid it up there. So I know this. When I run into people and they say, I follow the U of A. And, you know, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. It's like the Dallas Cowboy fans are just so arrogant and full of themselves. And I said, would you say you're a diehard U of A? Oh, yeah, I'm a diehard U of A fan. I said, yeah, you've died hard many times. And they don't like that joke.
Oh,
but I mean, anybody who tries to explain it away, like, well, this was a good learning curve. This will be good for next year's team. Well, let's just be clear. There will be no next year's team. Most everybody's going to go in the portal. So this idea of getting experience, that's old school. That doesn't apply anymore, John.
I agree with you 99% of the way. It does apply to Tommy Lloyd, though, because he will be back. And it is easy to forget. I think he's almost 50. You know, he's been around for a long time. It's easy to forget. This is only his third season as a head coach. He's coached 108 games, I think it is, as the boss. And he has a learning curve, for sure. His three Arizona teams have underperformed in March. They have lost, you know, one seed, two seed, two seed to teams that were much lower seeds. You know, the Clemson game, that they should have won that game, and they deserve to lose. Both things equally true. The shot selection, poor. Adjustments to Clemson's tactics, poor. And everybody's putting all the focus on Arizona's three-point shooting. They lost that game because their defense was horrendous in the final minutes. Every time down court, Clemson was getting layups out of a half-court offense, out of out-of-bounds plays. The fundamentals just completely collapsed defensively for Arizona. That is coaching. And it was not a good look for Lloyd or for Arizona's programs. They're very creative in how they lose these games in March, right? I mean, this was not the same blueprint we saw against Princeton or Houston or Buffalo or Xavier or East Tennessee State or Santa Clara, right? I mean, no program has taken on more bad losses in NCAA play over the course of decades than Arizona, in my opinion. And it's just going to get tougher starting next season in the Big 12.
When you hear people say, well, this was a great season that our cats put together for them, do you agree with that? I never do. I feel bad for the kids that, you know, your career is done or you're going to move on or whatever it may be. But when I hear all year long about how great we are, we're U of A and Bear Down and all that stuff, and every March, it's hard to play basketball when you have your hands around your neck. It's really hard to do that because that's what happens every March. They choke. There's no other way to spin it, put it. And if you're going to say that, then you're just getting a check from the U of A. You're on their payroll, John.
And they do it. I think this is a real interesting piece. They lose in the West, right? They always have a high seed. Yeah. They're always placed in the West. Spokane, Salt Lake,
Big
Sacramento,
fan base
LA.
Is there for them. Big fan base has come rolling in. It's a home court.
What path did they take to the national title in 1997? Memphis, Birmingham, and then Indianapolis. I wonder if they're better off getting shipped. I put this on Twitter. Tommy Lloyd ought to request getting sent to Vladivostok next year, because I think that there's something to the fact that they've got this huge fan base and there's enormous expectations. They got a home court advantage and they feel the pressure. There is zero doubt about that. So we'll see. In the Big 12, you lose more games. It's a tougher league. You lose more games in the regular season and you get a lower seed. Maybe they'll get shipped out more. But to your question about kind of judging the season, I do agree with you that if you flame out against a lower seed in the NCAA tournament, that is kind of how the season is defined. But some fans, and it's an old school view, you take pleasure in the grind and you get November to 4 months of enjoyment from watching your team, right? And you're not necessarily thinking about March. When you're playing and cheering in November and December and January, right, you're enjoying the in-the-moment experience of following your team. And in that way, sure, it's a successful season because Arizona gave their fans 4 months of success. But what do you remember when you look back? How is Lloyd's performance defined? How is the program defined? By March. And they really struggle.
John Woolner with us for a few minutes. Okay, these final four teams, which one is the most interesting to you? If you're sitting here, you're not coming, which is fine. I'm not going to be here. I've got some family stuff to handle. But I've got four teams that are rolling on in. Is there a team or a player that you get off the plane and it's, I got to get in front of this person, this coach? Who would it be?
You could pick the 7'4" Zach Edey from Purdue or the 7'2" Donovan Klingon from Connecticut. I would prefer DJ Burns. I would like to know just how big he is, right? That the NC State Center, he's kind of like, I mean, he's Charles Barkley in some ways, that kind of body shape. He's taller. He's 6'9", but I enlisted at 275. I would guess the guy's like 325. I think
you
he
show up with
room.
A scale, John. Would you have a?
I would show up with a scale. Yeah, yeah.
Say,
I'd show up with
can
a scale.
You step on this for a minute for me. We just had a balanced out.
A scale and a Big Mac. Step on the scale. Here's a Big Mac for your efforts. I think he's very interesting to watch because he is so gigantic, but he's also nimble. He's got quick feet. He's got a great shooting touch. He's left-handed. He's crafty, and he's always smiling, right? He's dancing on the court during the music, in between plays. I think he's really fun to watch. NC State, great story, right? They had to win 5 games in 5 days in the ACC tournament just to make the NCAAs. They weren't getting in as an at-large team. They were like 16-14. So they won the ACC tournament, and now they've got 9 wins in 2.5 weeks. It's incredible. And then there's Connecticut, which they should win this thing, and they probably will win both games by double digits. They are just a beast, become the first team since Florida in the mid-2000s to repeat. And the Hurley family would have back-to-back titles as a player with Bobby and as a coach with Danny. That'd be something else.
Yeah, I'm having Bobby on a little bit later. And it's going to be, hey, if you're coaching against your brother, what would you do?
Well, the other thing I'd ask him is, has Danny asked Bobby for advice on dealing with the back-to-back issue and dealing with the pressure of trying to repeat? Because Bobby went through that pressure trying to repeat as a player, right? Duke won it in 91 and 92. And when they won it back-to-back in 92, they were the first team to do it since the Wooden Dynasty at UCLA. So Bobby might have some interesting view of the navigating the back-to-back aspect.
All right. Anything else in your wheelhouse? Anything I'm leaving off the bone this week?
Maybe we can go
into spring football. I went out to spring football a couple times to see Dillingham's group. I haven't been down to Tucson as of yet. I needed them to go through their misery and agony with basketball, and then I'll head on down there and – you know,
it's interesting how college football dominates within the greater college sports space. College football dominates, 48 weeks a year.
Right.
Well, you get to championship week in early March, and it's like football doesn't even exist for a month. Right. And now once we get back to next week, the focus will turn to spring practice, transfer portal, the impact of all these coaching changes, right? We'll get back to football. Everything recalibrates back to college football. But right now, it's all about college hoops, and it's all about college basketball on the men's and the women's side, right? Like you said earlier, the women's side is really taking up a lot of oxygen. And I think, the TV ratings are up for both tournaments, and I think that they're helping each other, right? I don't know that it's women taking away from men in terms of viewers. I think they're lifting each other up.
Let you go off that. Appreciate your time as always. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.
And we're back with more after this timeout. All right, Final Four. We've been able to find Bobby Hurley. He is out and about. You've got people calling you here. You've got transfer portal there. I just wanted to get to you for a few minutes before this week gets crazy. What will this week be like for you with your family playing in it? Entertaining coaches, trying to be in the portal. How do you handle this week, Bobby?
Well, yeah, it's going to be super busy. Obviously, Brad, it's great being with you for a few minutes. We're in the portal. It's full time right now. We're visiting with kids, talking with a lot of kids, figuring out who on the roster wants to move forward with us. So obviously a lot of moving parts with that. That's going to get the majority of my time this week. I'm sure I'll get to briefly say hello and wish my brother good luck this weekend. It's exciting to have him in my hometown, going for something as special as a national championship. And I have a former assistant coach who worked under me at Buffalo, who's now the head coach at Alabama. So he's in his first Final Four against my brother. So a lot of little storylines this weekend. And obviously DJ Horn, that was very good to me at Arizona State for 2 years. Very happy that he's found success at NC State, and he'll be here as well.
Bobby Hurley with us for a few minutes. Will you have time to be together as a whole Hurley family this week at any
point? I don't think so, just because of, again, the portal and me, you know, on the phone with kids and Dan's preparation for these games. There's not a lot of time. His time is completely structured and very scheduled. But it's, you know, and then I'll be on the phone. So it's just going to be tough. And I'm doing some other corporate things this weekend and different promotional things for the Final Four itself.
When your brother is talking about his emotions and how he was crying, you get that, right? You get it before even the game started the other day. There was a lot made about your brother saying, yeah, I was just so wound up with emotion. That didn't surprise you, did it, Bobby?
No, I mean, we just, you know, I think it's our family and our nature to be very passionate and very emotional about what we do. I think he understands the magnitude of the moment and what's at stake for his players. You know, there's a real love for his players. I think he's gotten to the top of the mountain already as a coach. He knows what it feels like to be a national champion. And so it's more for him wanting to see that same experience this season for his team.
Have you even had time to watch these games because the portal is so consuming?
I was on the road watching his game on my phone. We were going to a couple of myself and a couple of the assistants were driving to go see a kid. And so I was able to watch a majority of it on my phone. It was amazing to watch what his team did in that stretch late first half into the second half. It was just, I haven't seen anything like it really probably in an NCAA tournament.
If you're doing thumbnail for the fans out there, analyst Bobby Hurley had on Connecticut, Alabama, you look at it, Purdue, North Carolina State, what do you see?
Well, I mean, I could say I've watched some of Alabama because I watched them earlier in the year versus Arizona, just getting ready for Arizona. I wanted to see what a team that plays really fast looks like against a team like Arizona. What Alabama does is they really shoot the three. And they attack the basket. They almost take no mid-range jump shots, and that's a distinct style on offense for them. I don't know if they have the interior game that UConn has. My brother just has a complete team. They play really good defense. They have great guard play. They can shoot, and then they have a 7-2 guy around the basket that blocks shots and altered shots and can score. So it's just hard to find the real chink in the armor for UConn. And then the other game is, you know, it's going to be come down to NC State and two big guys bruising in the paint. You know, Zach Edey and DJ Burns. DJ Burns had a fantastic game to lead North Carolina State to the Final Four. So that matchup should be a key one to look at.
If you're coaching against your brother, what would you do? What would you do, Bobby?
Well, I mean, it's tough. I think you might have to try and pressure him a little bit. Try and take some clock out of a possession, try and be disruptive. Their offense is very free flowing. And if you let them get into a rhythm at that end of the floor, they're tough to deal with. They got the kid Spencer, moves well without the ball, could shoot. Newton is really good at making plays, and then they have an inside game. And so there's a lot of, you know, they have a lot of great, you know, pieces to what they do. And then, you know, they have my brother's tenacity, you know, on defense. And I think you saw that, you know, when they just blitzed, you know, Illinois and just totally shut them down in that Elite Eight game.
Let's go off that, back at it. Thanks for the time.
Appreciate you, Brad.
See you. There's Bobby Hurley. Then we're back with more after this timeout.